Well, I don't know about the House family, but in my family, sorry, yeah, I'm mentioning you in the sermon. Okay, thanks. But in our family, every time we have a visitor these days, everyone keeps asking us who the baby looks like. This question comes up all the time, and everyone looks, and then they look, and they look, and they look. And to be honest, right now, we're not quite sure. We'll see how that goes. That's not my worry at all. I'm not worried about looks when it comes to our child. I'm more worried about personality. You see, there is a perfect storm that could be brewing in our infant. You see, our biggest fear is that our child, our son Joey, could be as annoying as I was as a child and mischievous as my wife Megan was as a child. And if our child is both of these things, well, hold on to your hats. It would be a very, very frightening thing. Now, because I value my marriage, I'm not going to tell you any Megan mischief stories this morning. I will, however, give you a small glimpse into my childhood. While we were expecting Joey's arrival, my parents came over and they brought with them my baby book and my baby photo albums. And we spent an afternoon going through all of them. My mom a little teary, you know, flipping through, oh, you were so small, oh, you grow up so fast, all those moments. And as we were looking through, I found amazing things I didn't know about myself. This is a very interesting activity. And as we looked through, I found one spot was very interesting. You know, they had the first words and things like that, but there was a line in the baby book for baby's first phrase, the thing that the child says over and over and over once they sort of learn to string a few words together. And the very first phrase I spoke that became my favorite phrase, once I knew what it meant, was, according to the book, "What doing, huh?" This is what I would ask over and over and over. I was that kid. Maybe some of you know that kid. Maybe some of you were that kid as well. What are you doing? Why? What for? Well, how does that work? Well, what does that do? What happens if... Oh, and the list of questions goes on. I swear every other thing I uttered throughout all of my childhood was ended with a question mark. Or at least a long pause expecting an answer. At one point in my childhood, my parents bought me a big book. It was about this thick, and it was called The Way Things Work. And it was a child's illustrated guide to everything from nuclear reactors to toilets. And it was nice, and these little pictures would explain how things worked, and I was very intrigued by this. And it got to the point where family and friends, when I would ask them a question, would say, "Why don't you go look in your book?" Yes, I'm so lucky there were people who loved me. Now, though I'm an extreme example of the inquisitive child, I do recognize that all of our children... Now, let me take a quick break since we're still getting to know each other. You will hear me anytime I talk about children use the phrase, "our children." I used this phrase before I had a kid of my own, and I invite all of us to use the phrase, "our children." Because when we think of the children that gather, that are part of our church community, that are part of our Parents' Day Out program, our other ministries, the children throughout our neighborhoods... We have a responsibility to care for and be invested in every single one of those lives. When we do a baptism, the questions we ask invite us to participate in these children's lives. So I will mention again, our children. You see, all of our children, I believe, carry tons of questions within them. In fact, last week during Sunday school, Brandon invited the children to talk about welcome and welcoming people. And the kids made me welcome cards. They're hanging on the door in my office, and about half of them contain questions, which I tried to email some answers back this week. But things like, "What is your favorite animal?" That one took me a little bit. I hadn't thought about it in ages. I opted for the pelican. I hope that's an okay answer. You know, "What is your favorite color?" Yellow, if you're wondering. These kinds of things. Also, but... Children love to ask questions. Questions are how we as children and even we as adults grow. Question asking is a developmental necessity. Question asking also says something about the person asking the question. To me, what it says is they care about the world around them. Because at its core, question asking is an amazing quality that tells us that children can care so much about the world around them that they're invested in it. They are aware. They're watching. They want to know, and they want to be engaged as they find out. It's with that perspective I now share with you a moment from Jesus' ministry. In the Gospel of Matthew, in the 18th chapter, it opens with this story. "At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and they asked him, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Jesus called a child whom he had put among them in the middle, and he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. Well, let's start at the very beginning here. Someone walks up to Jesus and asks a question. This is not out of the ordinary. As Pastor Carey mentioned in children's time, there were a lot of questions in Jesus' life. In fact, my rough estimate puts it that questions were about 40% of Jesus' ministry. I made that number up. The rest of Jesus' ministry was filled with things like healing, miracles, making people uncomfortable, and walking places. But in the midst of that, there were so many questions. I will say this is a very unique moment in the ministry of Jesus, because this is actually a Q&A. Usually with Jesus, it's Q and Q. Someone asks a question, he asks a question right back. But in this moment, he gives them an answer. Sort of. You see, in almost every question Jesus is ever asked, he answers with a question. But when he doesn't answer with a question, he answers with a story that leaves people with lots of questions. And if he doesn't do that, he uses some random metaphor that also leaves people with questions. Like grabbing a child, putting them in the middle of the circle and saying, there's your answer. I can only imagine the puzzled looks on people's faces. Okay, we were talking about greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You brought the snot-nosed kid in. They're covered in dirt. They're wiping their face. Well, what's going on here? Jesus leaves people with questions. And he does this for a reason. Now, this individual story of Jesus bringing the child into the center has been interpreted in all sorts of ways. Being humble like a child can mean many, many things. But I want to invite us this morning to think of the humility of asking questions like children do. When you ask an honest question, what you're saying is, I don't know, and I want to. There's a humility in asking a question. Now, last week in passing, I had mentioned in the sermon that I believe the church's job is not to be an answer place, but to be a question place. There are a lot of churches, pastors, and Christians that exist for the purpose of giving people answers. That bothers me. While I do believe there are some essential elements of faith that serve as foundational guides for us, such as God loves all people, I see far too many people going on beyond the foundation laying. In fact, some churches and pastors and Christians go so far beyond laying a foundation, they outright are building walls around people. They use the answers they push on people to define exactly what is and what isn't, what's right and what's wrong, who's acceptable and who's not, and how we should interpret everything that happens to us in life. They've got answers. Here's the thing. I don't know about your experience, but life doesn't seem to fit in that box for me. No matter how many answers I've been given, there is always something that pushes beyond that, that makes me go, well, what now? What now? I cannot tell you how many times I have sat with someone who spent their whole life living inside answers that someone had given them when all of a sudden there was a phone call, a diagnosis, a disaster, an honest conversation, a self-realization, something that didn't fit inside those answers they thought they knew that defined everything for them. And then everything comes crashing down. Too many answers is not a stable thing. Too many answers, in fact, are limiting. And at the end of the day, too many answers, well, they aren't ours. There's an old unattributed quote that I love. I actually saw it on a bag of Celestial Seasonings tea one time, hanging off the side. And it read, every child needs a good religious upbringing to rebel against. I saved that little tag. Because I love this quote. I love the idea that we need a good religious upbringing to rebel against, because it reminds me that only in the pushing back and asking of questions will our spiritual and religious life become our own. Friendly reminder, rebelling against your religious upbringing doesn't mean completely walking away from it. If anything, rebelling against something actually brings you into a closer relationship with it than you were before. Don't tell any teenagers that, because I'm sure they like to think that they're walking away. But when we engage things and push back, we become deeply connected to them. So to me, this quote invites us to take ownership and to decide what we will build the foundations of our life on. It goes back to that humility Jesus spoke of. Asking questions is a humble act that tells the world we don't have it all figured out. I certainly don't. I will gladly announce to you and to the rest of the world that I do not know it all, and I'm willing to learn. And if more churches, pastors, and people, if more Christians would be willing to make that statement, I can only imagine how the world would respond. How many times have we heard people joke that when you're missing something, it's always in the last place you look? Now, we all know the reasonable, logical explanation for this is because who really keeps looking for something after they've found it? That would be strange. What are you doing? Looking for my keys. Didn't you find them 10 minutes ago? Yes, I did. Very odd moment. Because usually when we're looking for something, it's a very concrete, limited thing. It's a zero-sum moment. Once you found it, it's nowhere else. But unlike your keys, the questions of life aren't all behind the couch cushions. I checked. If we accept a simple answer to the questions of life, it can too easily become the last place we look. I found it, I'm done. And if we quit looking, how much might we miss? Because there are some amazing things around us, hidden in the mysteries of life, shared in the life stories of the people next to you, written in the pages of our scriptures, and deep within our own hearts. There are things yet to be found and discovered, questions yet to answer, things that are before us. And I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to searching them out together. May we be blessed and be a blessing as we seek to do so. Amen.